Welcome to Innovation and Leadership. I'm Jess Larson. On this episode, we get to have Steve Lucas, CEO of Boomi. Steve, thanks for doing this.
Jess, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
So last valuation I saw for Boomi was around $4 billion. Has there been any updates to that publicly since?
Publicly, okay. No. Privately, okay. Lots.
So I really want to talk about Boomi. I have so many questions. Before we jump into it, though, let's go down memory lane a little bit. Let's talk about, you know, some of these other billion-dollar transactions and SAP and selling Marketo to Adobe and these kind of things. Can we start there?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, Marketo was my first stint as CEO. I'd been at SAP for a long time. Got to work with some really awesome people. I mean, when you get to work with, you know, Bill McDermott, who's done extraordinarily well. He's over at ServiceNow, just crushing it. And Rob Enslin, he's the CEO over UiPath, also just amazing. And of course, Hasso Plattner, the founder of SAP, like, no, that's not a terrible company to keep at any level. And learned a lot from all of them. And even going back before then, I worked pretty closely with the team at Salesforce.com in the early days. Really, really fun. But, you know, in my time there, I think everybody has in the back of their mind kind of like, try this CEO thing at some point, you know. Marketo came along in late 2015, early 2016, and it was, you know, difficult to say no to because, I mean, the brand is killer, right? Like, everybody knew Marketo, and the space is killer, which is marketing automation. What was not so killer was, you know, the company had kind of struggled in the public markets, and that's why the market cap was a bit tamped down. So Vista came in, Vista Equity, and was my first foray, you know, when they acquired Marketo and took it private. It was my first foray as CEO, as well as my first time in private equity. A long list of firsts. I had a great time working with Vista, and I just kind of jumped in both feet first. And I couldn't say no to the opportunity, but so the company was taken private for circa $1.2 billion, 24 months, almost to the month after I started. We sold the company for right around $4.8 billion, so call it five for all intents and purposes, to Adobe, which was a great return for the shareholders. And we built a lot of value, wrote a book right there, you know, while we were at it, you know, just to kind of drive the transformation. There are many stories to unpack there. And then after that, you know, I talk about other things, but during, you know, then COVID happened, right? So I spent a year at Adobe, worked closely with Shantanu Narayen, the CEO there. That was amazing. He is freaking brilliant.
Guys, in what way? What's an example?
Well, you know, there's one word that is burned into my memory with Shantanu is altitude. He would always talk about, he would always pause a conversation and just ask, are we at the right altitude? Always. And it kind of made you think like, well, am I, or am I trying to solve kind of something low level? Am I too high level? Am I, it was just incredibly thoughtful. And he would always talk about things like the power of words and not value judging things. Like, is it good or is it bad? Let's use less adjectives. And let's focus more on the data, what it is versus value judging it. I learned, you know, even at my ripe old age, I just learned a ton from him. He's incredible. But so I did that for a year, and then I kind of got the itch again. But COVID happened, and I was on the board of a privately held company by Vista again, iSIMS. And they said, hey, you know, a lot going on with COVID, et cetera, et cetera. Do you want to jump in as CEO? I said, sure, let's do that. And they're in the HCM talent acquisition space. 2 years later, TA Associates came in and, you know, bought half the company, so co-invested with Vista. And that was a good time for me to do something fundamentally different. So I took a little bit of time off. Here I am at Boomi almost a year and a half later.
Maybe before we jump into Boomi, let's talk about this $1.2 billion to $4.8 billion Marketo story. What's one of the principles that you feel like served you best in that journey as CEO?
It's got to start with a ridiculously strong vision. Like, you've got to bring vision to the table. When I got to Marketo, the company had obviously pioneered the world of marketing automation, right? There was like Marketo, Eloqua, Pardot or Pardot, I guess, if you're French. But, you know, there's a bunch of those. But Marketo was, you know, I won't say they invented marketing automation, but they were a pioneer there. When I got there, the pitch was like, hey, Steve, we are a marketing automation product. And like, wow, that is almost interesting. Like, it's almost interesting, right? But we've got to be more than a marketing automation product. We have to be a platform. I've learned in almost 30 years of doing this, like, people buy products, companies buy platforms. It's that simple. And we, you know, after talking, you know, for many, many moons to, you know, range of customers, analysts, settled on this notion of like, hey, everybody's leaning in on this experience, which is cool, but let's not just be another experience platform. Let's drive more than that. And so I wrote a book right there. It's called Engage to Win. The first line of the book for a marketing automation company, this may sound like heresy, is no one wants to be marketed to. I mean, think about it for a minute. When's the last time you woke up in the morning and you're like, I hope that my inbox is full of mattress sale emails. Like, I hope that's what I get to. No one cares. But the second line of that book is everyone wants to be engaged with. And I believe that's a universal truth, is I want to share my opinion with you. You want to share your opinion with me. We want to engage, right? And so we re-platformed the narrative, the vision, as the engagement platform. And we built everything around it, all new offerings, features, functions, product at Marketo to drive this notion of, hey, you will get your customers to engage with you as a business if you're using this platform, and here's how, dot, dot, dot. Wrote the book, evangelized it, started with the vision. Now, of course, the vision is great. You got to have that vision, but you got to evangelize it until you're just purple, right? You just have to stay on it. And so we evangelized the heck out of it. But then the second thing that we did, and this is kind of one of my core principles from a leadership standpoint, is everybody's got to go from, cool, we have the strategy, we've got the vision, to what's the execution here? And that's something that Marketo was struggling with, was just, okay, so now we've got a cool vision. How do we go execute on it? So I leveraged something that I stole from Mark Benioff. I freely admit it. He has this pretty slick methodology called the V2 Mom. I don't know if you've heard of anybody talk about vision, values, methods, obstacles, metrics. Admittedly, he's a master of branding, but not so much here with the V2 Mom name, but it's quite simple, but brilliant what he does, which is, here's a single page, one page, not double-sided, and I will articulate for you the vision of this company, the values that we espouse, the methods, he called them obstacles, and then metrics, I call them objectives and metrics, but one page, and the brilliance behind that. Now, I've evolved the brand. I just call it the plan on a page here. Boomy, we call it the Boomy plan on a page, or BPOP. At Marketo, it was MPOP. At iSims, it was iPOP. That one worked well. But it's vision, values, methods, objectives, and metrics. Every single employee has access. Every team member has access to that one page. No one in the company can say, I don't know what our plan is. Everyone knows the plan. And then the second thing we do, and we did this at Marketo, is every single employee has to have their own plan on a page. Every single one. And the whole notion is that as the CEO, I can step back and say, look, everybody knows the plan. You know the vision, you know the strategy, and you've tethered your strategy and plan to that. That, along with a lot of hard work, a leadership transformation, rebooting the entire sales organization, and we nearly doubled the revenue in 24 months of the company.
It sounds so simple when you say it that way.
Exactly. Yeah. It was a long day.
That's inspiring. Let's switch to Boomy. For people who don't know what Boomy does, let's start there. And then, you know, how many staff, how many clients, any fancy numbers we can share with people.
Well, interestingly, so first of all, before we talk about anything else, we need to talk about the name. Boomy is actually a derivative of a Hindi word, BHOOMI, Boomy, same thing, which loosely translates into of the earth. And it means like everything is grounded in the earth. The plants, the trees, you name it, we're all grounded here. And Boomy, its sole purpose is to connect things. That's what Boomi does better than anybody else, I believe, anywhere in the world, is we connect things. Now, we connect systems, applications, data, devices, but we connect things. And it's kind of like that universal truth that we just talked about at Marketo, which is like, hey, no one wants to be marketed to, but everybody wants to be engaged with. My universal truth, and I'm a big believer in finding that universal truth where everybody just says, yeah, that's not a load of BS. It makes sense, right? And the universal truth at Boomi is everything works better when it's connected. But think about the world that we live in. Like, how much stuff is in a disconnected state all the time, right? It's like, man, if I could just get this thing to talk to that thing. And in enterprises, businesses in particular, they struggle all the time with, man, this project failed because this thing didn't talk to that thing. Oracle doesn't talk to SAP, doesn't talk to Microsoft and Salesforce. And that is a universal truth. It's not going away. And so that's where we start, is that everything is better when it's connected. And so that's how we articulate our value, is we are an integration and automation platform. That's what we do. And we're hyper focused on it. Now, I added, when I got here to Boomi, the word automation, because my kind of argument to the team was like, hey, in the spirit of while we're at it and we're connecting systems, we should automate them too. That makes a ton of sense. So that's what we do. We have over 20,000 customers. We're a $500 million company, and we're loving life, growing fast, and just looking to have a good time while we do it.
And sorry, how many staff?
Oh gosh, I forgot about that. Great question. It's about 1,800 is my guess, 1,700 to 1,800 given the day. Yeah, but Boomi's been doing extraordinarily well. I'd say that. So our goal is really quite simple, is Boomi wants to continue to grow better than 20% and continue to deliver better than 20 points of margin as our company. We just, our goal is to be a Rule of 40 company or be better than, and that's what we've been working towards.
So what do you feel like is another core principle to help you actually have confidence that you can pull that off?
Well, you got to be beyond that super strong vision we already talked about, and beyond the clarity that you have to bring with the plan on a page, like whatever system you ultimately use. You have got to be accessible as a leader these days. I sit back and go, like, I look at some of these, you know, leaders in technology that like try and rewrite the history books about themselves. Like, oh, I was never really born. I came down from a mountain on a unicorn, and I just know everything about everything. It's just, it has no appeal in the world that we live in. It just doesn't. You've got to be an absolutely real human being. You've got to be accessible to others. And you've just got to be able to engage and communicate, especially in the world that we live in right now, across many, many different generations of people, right? So you've got to be able to engage and connect across a range of generations.
What's one way that you do that?
Well, I think first of all is listen. Like, first and foremost, right? You can't have the single generic message that you believe is just going to land perfectly with everyone. You've got to get out and talk to team members. You've got to talk to team members in different geographies, different origins, different countries, different age brackets. You got to talk to people and ask them, like, what do you think? Does this even make sense? Like, am I making any sense? And then you got to listen. So that's first and foremost. You got to do that. I think the second thing is you've got to build your leadership team past listening. I think it's diversity on the team, the leadership team, all of the above.
Okay. What's another billion-dollar success principle for growing quickly?
You've got to be at all times willing to outwork your competition. You know, I think that to a certain degree, and I know someone's going to like email you or message me on LinkedIn or X, I guess I got to call it that now, not Twitter. But like, I think strategy to a certain degree is overrated. I think it is. There's a little bit of that in there, right? You've got it. My question is, do I have a team that is willing to wake up every morning and outwork the same person that we know exists at the five competitors we have? Are they willing to work harder? And yes, work smarter, absolutely. But are we willing to outwork our competition? I think You know, I think strategy just gets overrated, and I think being tactical is underrated. Like, you got to get in there every day. And I talk about this with my team all the time, but I was in a call right before the end of the quarter with my sales team. And I said, there's someone just like you at another company that wants to take exactly what you have. They're in the same territory you are. They've got, you know, a family they care about and friends they're going to go out with on Friday night. And really what it comes down to is, are you willing to outwork them? That's what it comes down to. And that's the face-off. We pick the sports analogy, right? We'll go with hockey for now. But whoever you're facing off against, are you willing to outwork them every day? So it's not to say that, you know, that's why I started with strategy. I'm not, you know, kind of like talking out of both.
Well, I want to talk about this. So my right, brother great. And I, my one business partner of the last 20 years, my brother, we talk about this a lot, about kind of the 80-20 principle and how it applies in different ways. And I'm such a believer in, you know, a poor plan executed well does not create success, right?
That's fair.
Okay.
That is
but,
fair.
But at the same time, I think it's this, it's like, if somebody is just a hard worker, what they really need is a superior vision, like you were talking about, like a genuinely superior vision that they are committed to of how they're going to be better. But then that's not enough. It's like, oh, great, we built the fastest Ferrari in the race. If you don't have somebody skilled at driving it all the way till the finish line, though, the great car still didn't do you any good, right? And like, you think about Mark Benioff, it's like, no software. I mean, like, he mopped the floor. I mean, I was a sales guy back then. I remember I had ACT on my computer, and the bigger companies had Siebel, and the, do you know what I mean? Like, it was genuine. Like, he had a vision for something that was genuinely superior. But if it hadn't, like, if the people hadn't worked hard enough to actually make it user-friendly and seamless to, like, dump all of my contacts from ACT and go to Salesforce, It wouldn't have mattered that it was a better idea if it had, you know, like Elon Musk saying, well, let's get down to first principles and make a reusable rocket. Like, nobody accidentally comes up with a reusable rocket, right? Like, you actually have to believe that's possible. You have to have the vision for it. But having the vision is still not enough. It's just step one, right?
Yeah, hard work. Well, that's the thing. I mean, you read about, say what you will, you know, Elon Musk, but the reality is that man slept on the factory floor. How many of us are willing to do that? Here's what I know about him. He's willing to outwork anyone in that same job. And there is no question that is the case. There is no question. Like, when did everybody ever say, like, oh, you know what? Elon Musk is not working as hard as the CEO of fill-in-the-blank car manufacturer, like, or rocket manufacturer or whatever. This guy will outwork you, and there is nothing you can do about it. So you're right. It is that magical convergence of sweat equity.
Okay, I got another one for you. Maybe less controversial than Elon Musk. Maybe not. The Apple Newton existed a real long time before the iPhone, right? And everybody said it was terrible. You can't put all these things in one. You know, like, all these criticisms for the Apple Newton could have been applied to the iPhone. Everything people thought was so wrong with the Newton, and, you know, they're just too ambitious. You can't have it all in one, and all these things could absolutely have been said about the iPhone. Had Steve Jobs not been so exacting on it being so good that, you know, a three-year-old can start playing with it, right? So intuitive, like, that hard work of pushing and the design aesthetic and the marketing and, you know, like, it that's like such a clear black and white within the same company, right? And you can make other arguments about the timing, and I'm not discounting those either. But anyways, in favor of your point of, like, strong vision and willing to do what others aren't to make it exceptional.
I will say this about the Newton. I think we should talk about the Newton for 30 okay. more seconds, because here's the thing. Say what you will about the Newton. It was a failure, it was a success. Like, hindsight gives us, you know, especially in my ripe old age of 51, the one thing I have is perspective. And that's probably the best gift you get with age, is perspective. And when you look back and you think, would Apple have had the same success? And I don't know, but I'm going to put it out there. The same success with the iPhone had they not tried with the Newton. had they not tried? Because if you go back and you look at the Newton, watch any video, just pull up a YouTube video, check. There are trappings of that iPhone on that Newton. There are even little icons. There's little Easter eggs that showed up on the iPhone. There are. They are there. And I spoke with the team about this. I told a story, and I don't remember the exact name of the Olympian, but it was like, you know, 3-4 Olympics that they had gone to, and I need to dig up the name, but they never won a medal. Why do you keep going back, right? And what, you know, there's this, the question I asked my team is, were they successful if they never won a medal? It depends on your definition of success. It depends on, are you looking at the journey with perspective, right? This is a person who was performing at just ridiculously incredible levels over and over and over and over and over again. So they never won a medal, but they've achieved more than I ever will in the world of athleticism, sport, right? So it just kind of depends. And with Apple, it's like, they keep coming out. It's like, I did this whole write-up. I haven't published it yet. Where is it? Oh, here. I got this thing right here.
Vision Pro.
Okay, so for everybody watching, listening, yeah, say block one. So I got $4,000. I mean, this thing, here's the thing. Is Apple's willing to go on the journey? They are, right? And if you use one of these things, the Vision Pro, there are things on it that are going to change the world 10 years from now. There are. I will go on record saying it. And it's just that Apple's willing to, this is like what your point was, and it deeply resonates with me. If you're willing to go on the journey and you're willing to stick with it and you're willing to fight that fight and outwork your competition, assuming that the strategy is calibrated well and you're operating at the right altitude, in the end, you know, I think you can win. I really do. I believe that. I think anybody can win at anything if they're willing, if they got that, it's that right convergence of enough strategy and hard work. But I don't want to change the subject, but this thing's pretty good.
Okay. Tell us, how long has the Vision Pro been out? How many days?
Not even a week yet, I think.
What's one of your favorite things about it?
Well, okay. So first of all, it has changed how... let's put aside the fact that I'm probably going to take it with me on every international flight I take from here on out. Because you know you get on one... You know, you get on the plane and you're looking around going, I know none of us really want to be here with each other, but we've got to for the next 12 to 14 hours. So, you know, I'm going to put this thing on my head and just go off into a different world. Pretty good. The thing that is amazing, first of all, the eye tracking is disturbingly good. Just sitting there, because you know, when you're on a phone and you're kind of used to this and swiping and doing a thing, and you just sit there now and just look, and it just works. That's remarkable. And the consumer applications are super interesting. Industrial is over the top good, but then you start actually doing things like grab a window and pinch. To move it, and you start getting this Tony Stark thing going on, or Iron Man. It is the first time in all of this AR and VR that I could see incredibly valuable use cases emerge. But here's the thing. They put whatever it is, like, I don't know, 6 cameras or something, and then all the, you know, the motion tracking. The gesture recognition, second to none. There is nothing on the market this good. So they put a ridiculous amount of engineering into this package. That what is clear to me and what I wrote in the post I'm about to make is this is a new platform. It is an entirely new platform. And as much, you know, kind of saber rattling as Meta and Facebook or whatever they're doing, they got nothing like this. And I mean that. Like, I am not a paid spokesperson for Apple. I'm telling you, there is nothing that packs this much engineering horsepower into that little package.
So we've already established that it takes the hard work to make vision reality, right? And outworking the competition. But let's go back to vision for a second. Maybe a combination of vision and culture. You look at how Apple has repeatedly created entire new platforms. Right. What do you think it takes to generate that kind of vision and not have it be a one-hit wonder? Like, what do you think that takes at a leadership level, at a culture level, to create the kind of organization that is like genuinely industry changing multiple times?
Honestly, when you asked that question just now, the lightning bolt that pops in my head right this moment is stop talking about failure. This is the whole thing. It comes back to, like, is the Olympic athlete that never wins a medal, are they a failure? No, they're not. And you know, the reality is, like, is the Newton a failure, or was it a critical step to make
you
the
know
iPhone?
What's funny is, like, to me, I think there's a bifurcation of internal success, external success, right? Did he succeed at winning the gold medal? Objectively, no. Is that the only form of success? Objectively, no. Right? Back to your Newton one. Like, I want to say he's one of the founders of Google. I can't remember which. I'm probably misquoting. But there's something, or maybe it was the head of Google X, their experimental division, that said, the thing with failure is it's very hard to fail all the way. When you do something, it's very hard not to, and it doesn't go the way you want it, it's very hard to not have learned something, and possibly something very important.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and that's my argument in favor of what you're saying about the Newton.
Well, that's the thing. And so it comes back to, like, you know, this when you ask that question around, like, what distinguishes companies that can, over the long haul, continue to innovate, it's a willingness to fail. And I hate the word, right? But I think it's a willingness to try and experiment. It's kind of really all you're doing when you fail is just figuring out, like, what doesn't work. But then you take the next step to tweak ever so slightly. Eventually you find the magic. It's like, you know, we're doing this whole, you know, like a lot of companies right now with Boomi, we've built a shockingly, we have Boomi GPT and a Boomi AI offering. There are probably zero people that are going to go, wow, that's news, right? Of course we're going to innovate in and around a generative technology and AI. Why wouldn't we? So then you go, well, what is an integration or an automation company have anything to do with generative and AI? Well, for us, you know, if you're take one of Boomi's many user personas, a database administrator, right? The last thing that a database administrator wants to do when they come into work is go, select this table, grab a bunch of fields, connect them. Like, that is not exciting. But what is exciting is when they have a box and they can type words like, connect Salesforce to NetSuite, go. And then it automatically grabs the systems and the tables and what needs to be connected. And then instead of connecting in systems and tables, they could actually say, oh my gosh, look at that. There's these invoices that aren't running because of this issue. We just raised the value of their job, their contribution. And so we've given especially our AI and machine learning engineering team, we've said, like, experiment, try things. And if it doesn't work, that's awesome. Then do it again and slightly differently, right? That's what we want to do, is just give permission to people to say, like, let's not think about failure. Let's think about learning what doesn't work and then refining.
It's funny. Failure is such an imprecise word, right? Like, as you were talking, I'm a lifelong snowboarder. I almost didn't go to college trying to be a pro snowboarder, right? And I've always said, like, if you're not falling down, it means you're not trying hard enough stuff, right? If you're going off the big snowboard jumps, or, you know, we've got the Woodward Park here, like, kids who are practicing to go to the X Games, right? And I take my teenagers over there and go ride with them. And it's like, if you're landing everything, it's because you're playing it so safe that you're not learning anything.
Yeah.
And yet there's this other aspect of, like, don't do a jump so big you're going to die. Like, let's not do literally paralyze yourself risk, you know, like measured risk, like survivable risk. But it is kind of an indicator, like, if everything you're trying is working, you're probably not pushing the envelope, right?
Completely. And that's it. And I know there's a lot of people that say, well, if you've never failed, then you've not tried hard enough. But again, it's my beef. If we're airing our strongly worded complaints here, my strongly worded complaint is the word failure itself. It is poorly defined, and I think it's overused. And I think it's objective failure is. I'm not even sure.
Well,
that's
I love when you said the word experiment, because to me it's like, if every experiment turned out exactly the way you thought it would, are you really pioneering any science here?
Yeah, exactly. And we all know the story about, you know, like, how many times did Thomas Edison try before light bulbs, or whatever. It's like, actually, there's a long list of Thomas Edison's of different filaments that actually worked pretty well. So any one of them could have worked, you know, that he had tried, but it was the one that lasted the longest where he's like, now this one, I think I can commercialize. That's it. None of the other ones were failures. And he could have commercialized them. They would have been just fine.
Interesting. So I want to hear another billion-dollar success secret for all the CEOs and fund managers listening or people who want to become them.
Well, we obviously talked about strong vision, talked about plan on a page. I think that's incredibly important. I think this notion of experimentation, just the whole word failure, the avoidance of, but let's be more clear on what that is. I think all those matter. Knowing your market matters. I think when you talk about strategy and you could talk about execution, but the reality is there's this formula for success that you just kind of can do over and over and over again, right? It's the right amount of analysis, it's the right amount of investment, and it's the right amount of execution. So I think the analysis matters too. It's know your market. Any market that I've gone into, the number one behind the scenes thing that I'm always doing is, you know, who's looking at this market? Who has an opinion on this market? Who's competing in this market? Can I learn as much about them as possible? So it's not just, because I think that it's a bit overrated where it's like, hey, let's just ask our customers what they think. Well, 9 times out of 10, your customer's going to want, whatever you do at the cheapest price possible. And that's fine. But I think it's, do you have that, the analyst network of people that know what they're talking about? My first 6 months here at Boomi, I spent a disproportionate amount of time talking to analysts, talking to, interviewing as many human beings as I possibly could from my competition, whether I'm going to hire them or not. I'm going to interview everybody and I'm going to learn and I'm going to listen as much as I possibly can about this market. And then I think it's trying to figure out, where is this market going? Like what was abundantly clear was, this integration market that we have, and then this automation market over here, the automation market being heavily populated by UiPath, Automation Anywhere, a long list of, amazing companies. These things are converging. They have to. Connecting to systems and then writing an if-then-else statement, yeah, that's going to converge, right? So it's know your market. I don't know if people stay students long enough in their markets. I think you kind of have an insight, build a product around it, and then you go execute, execute, execute. And then where do you find yourself? Innovator's dilemma. And so I think it's kind of like, how can you be that student of your market constantly? For me, it's hard to do this. Satya Nadella once said, and it has stuck with me forever, if someone asked him about the Microsoft culture, like how did you do it, right? Because he's pretty amazing. He is objectively amazing, I think. He said, I'm going to butcher the quote, but it was like, I want Microsoft to be in a learn-it-all state, not a know-it-all state. It's not bad. That's pretty good, right? And you just kind of, when you heard it, you're like, okay, there's a universal truth right there. There it is. And he's right. Because there are times where Microsoft was very much in a know-it-all state, right? It's like, we know everything, Windows is awesome. Well, actually, the internet came along, right? And then actually mobile computing came along, and actually cloud computing came along. And Satya has just done this incredible job of like getting Microsoft into the markets that matter and winning, or getting out if they can't win. Ergo, why the Windows phone doesn't exist anymore, right? So this notion of being a learn-it-all, and I not articulated as succinctly as Satya does or did, but I really aspire to be in that learn-it-all state, not a know-it-all state at all times. It's not, and that's, by the way, that's really hard to do.
I got a question for you. When you're the big cheese, when you're the big cheese and people are more than willing to tell you what you want to hear because they're hoping for a promotion or things like this, right? And you get stuff from the press talking about your multi-billion-dollar successes. And sometimes it can come down to just yourself choosing humility. Like society, life, your environment is not forcing you to humility. Like it has to be a choice. what tips or advice do you have of like staying in this like humble enough to learn, like embracing the learn it all for yourself when maybe it's not being forced on you?
Like I said, it's hard to do, right? Because there is an echo chamber that you can very quickly enter. And I think maybe it was the founder of Intel that said a healthy dose of paranoia is something that you should carry around, you know, at all times. I know that there is another me that is trying to work harder than I am, wants what we've built at all times. And I think it is that healthy dose of paranoia that there's always another mountain there is to climb. It's always another hill to ascend and to ascend to. I have had and will always have a healthy dose of paranoia. And, you know, you get the cliche statements, oh, you're only as good as your last success. That's actually true. It is true. So for me, it's just a constant reminder when I wake up every day that there's another me, there's a better version of me that is out there right now that is going to outwork me. And am I willing to stay in it, to stay focused, challenge my team, but more importantly, challenge myself? I think you just have to be in that challenger state 24/7. Maybe I'm wired that way. I don't know, but you know, I was in a meeting. There's no names to name, but had a conversation with someone. It was a meeting, and this person in this meeting, it was fairly clear that their objective was to be the smartest person in the room. But the interesting thing was that their objective was not to solve the problem. It was just to be the smartest person in the room. It's like, okay, congratulations, you get the smartest person in the room award. But how has that helped the company in any way? How does that benefit anyone else in this room? Have you made them smarter? No, absolutely not. And, you know, I didn't call it out, but it was very clear to me that was happening. And, you know, what I would just say is like, I think it's like, can you wake up every day and just know that someone, as I said, are you willing to outwork the competition? Just know that someone else is willing to outwork you.
Yeah. It's interesting, the self-check there, right? I want to say it's Gandhi said, we can't learn anything by talking because we already know that stuff.
So true.
And like, it's like, you need to trick yourself into it. Like, it's an interesting thing to think about, like, you know, by talking right now, I might get like the gratification or the perceived status upgrade or the whatever I think I'm going to get by sharing the story. Like, it's very funny that I'm an interviewer, because over 900 and something episodes, there's been almost nothing that anyone has ever said in 900 episodes that I didn't want to interrupt and go, oh, me too. Let me tell you, I've got a story. You know what I read about in a book? You know, like, I would say it takes me more restraint than the average person to not, and give me, I do it wrong all the time. And I interrupt people and I go too long on my own stories all the time. But like, this idea of like, I'm not going to learn anything if I now tell my story, right? And like, I think there's a time to tell a story when it will enhance the conversation, right? But I have to ask myself all the time, like, am I telling the story for my benefit or for their benefit? Because I'm telling you it for my benefit, right. I should probably keep it to myself. I'm not going to learn anything by talking. Like, I could choose selfishness and be quiet and listen to them, you know?
Well, it's, you know, this is the thing, though. As a CEO, like, you ask the question is, what you do a great job of is drawing truth out of people, though. And that's the thing, right? Is this is, I hope that, if anything, we can talk about some truth. And here's the truth. As CEO, there is so much freaking pressure to know everything about everything. There is. But the truth is no CEO knows everything about everything. The best CEOs, they know exactly what they don't know. And look, I mean, like, you know, if I've done anything well, It's bring really freaking smart people that know way more than I do. Steve Jobs said so himself, is like, you don't hire smart people so that then you spend all the time telling them what to do. You hire smart people so they tell you what to do. That's the whole thing, right? If I am blessed with anything, it's that I am surrounded by smart people that constantly tell me what to do. And that's a good thing. That is what you want. It's the best CEOs. And like, I, you know, when I walk into a room and I see a great CEO and she's surrounded, or he's surrounded by like ridiculously smart people, and that CEO is listening to them, then I go, yeah, that's a really good CEO.
No kidding. Well, if people want to consider becoming a Boomi client, learn more about you guys, where should they do that online?
Well, Boomi.com. I mean, first and foremost, right? Like, we got a lot of good stuff up there. You know, we've completely streamlined Boomi. So you don't even need to just find out more. You can go to Boomi.com. You can sign up for Boomi. You can start using it right now. That's one of the big things that we did, was make the product universally accessible to everyone. So we did. So we love that. Of course, you can hit me up on LinkedIn. We are on X/Twitter/, hopefully stays something like that for a while. You know, we'd love to engage. You know, it's part of the company culture. We have three values at Boomi: is be bold, be you, and be Boomi. And being Boomi is, you know, part of it is just being accessible. So anybody wants to find out anything, they can also literally send me an email anytime. I'm steve@boomi.com.
I love it. Maybe to end off here, what's one of the best pieces of advice you ever received?
You be you. It was the best piece of advice I ever got. I was talking to Bill McDermott, and you know, I told him, I want to be a CEO someday. I want to do this. I want to do that. But I'm not sure if I have the right personality, the right temperament. I don't know. What is that? And he just said, and of course he does it in his perfect Bill, you know, from New York, actually said, Steve, I'm going to give you some advice, my man. He said, you be you. And that was it. I mean, it was admittedly at the moment, it was a little anticlimactic. I was like, okay, I'll be me. That's fine. But as I look back with perspective on that advice, it was the best I could have ever gotten, which is just be that best version of yourself, not a second-rate version of somebody else. I think that's what, at least that is what I have decided he meant, you know, now. But man, that was good. It was just simple and good and meaningful.
Well, I think that's a mic drop.
There it is right there.
I don't think we can beat that. Okay, everybody. Thanks for listening. Go to Boomi. Connect with Steve on LinkedIn. Follow his stuff. Bye, everyone.
Sounds good.